this.
Move
on.
On the show.
The Economic Development Budget Division of Wednesday, February 14th, will come to order. We have the Minnesota Arts Board first.
We have a quorum of three. Quorum of five.
Welcome again, Mr. Prohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Prohl, and I'm the Interim Executive Director of the Minnesota State Arts Board. You might remember that when I was here in January to give you our agency overview, I'd been on the job about a month. I have a whole 2 months now under my belt, and I'm really happy to be back to have the chance to be with you and outline the governor's proposed budget for the Minnesota State Arts Board. I have, as you might expect from the director of the State Arts Board, put together quite a lineup for you today. I brought several other folks with me who I'll introduce as we go through the our testimony, who will describe the important ways the state dollars invested in the arts are enriching the lives of Minnesota citizens and making ours a more vibrant and prosperous state.
And Mr. Prohl, I think you did that the last time in a lot of ways. So try and concentrate a little bit on as much as you can on the budget.
Certainly.
The fiscal part of it. We'll be more than happy to hear how important the arts are and how the money gets applied. But try and make sure that you concentrate on the actual budget that's been presented to us by the governor.
Certainly.
If that threw you off your game, start where you're going to start.
Okay? To do some interpretive dance. Where he is.
I will find my place.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, may I pass this on to Pam Perry Weaver,
Absolutely.
Who can speak on behalf of the board, and then I will pick up where the budget pieces.
That's no problem. Ms. Weaver, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pam Perry Weaver. I am honored to be the chair of the Minnesota State Arts Board this year. And while Tom is finding his place, and I know that you want to talk about the budget, I will have to do some interpretive dance to make this quick.
Don't get on the table, though, okay?
Not on the table, down the middle, maybe. 82% of Minnesotans want to see funding for the arts. So, I think that the governor gave us a little bit of money, and we're hoping to... that the legislature will take a look at that proposal and be generous and meet the public's need. State funds leverage 5-1 from the public and private sector. So from the private sector. So talk about bang for your buck. I don't think that you're going to see that anywhere else. I'm sorry.
9-1.
So those are the only two things I want to talk to you about today. Tom?
Sure.
Mr. Prohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I will talk to you about the Arts Board budget. The Arts Board and the state arts community and millions of Minnesotans who value the arts need the state to return to its pre-crisis financial investment level. In his fiscal year 2008-2009 budget, the governor has taken the first step by proposing an increase of $1 million to the state arts appropriation. On page 9 of your packets, you will find that the appropriation levels that the governor has proposed for the 2008 and 2009 biennium. For comparison, we've also provided you our current fiscal year 2006-2007 appropriation, which is in the first column, and the pre-crisis fiscal year 2002-2003 appropriation, which is in the third column. The governor has proposed an appropriation of $18.2 million for the arts. Out of his $34.4 billion budget for the fiscal years 2008 and 2009. This appropriation represents an investment in the arts of approximately 5 cents for every $100 the state will spend. What I'd like to do is just talk to you about the lines of the Arts Board grants, or of the budget. There are three lines, beginning with the Regional Arts Councils, Arts Board Grants, and Arts Board Operations and Services. I'm going to leave the Regional Arts Councils to another member of our team up here to speak directly to that, Carolyn Bai, and I will start with the Arts Board's grants. During the budget cuts of 2003, this line was reduced by 30%. The governor's proposed appropriation returns this line to 69% of the pre-crisis funding level. On page 10, you can see that we use these funds to make grants to organizations that produce or present the arts, grants to individual artists that create the art, and grants to schools and organizations that provide arts and education activities. On page 11, you can see in fiscal year 2006, the Arts Board received 524 applications requesting more than $12 million. We were able to make 320 grants totaling just under $6 million, so roughly half. A few of the names that the members of the committee would recognize that have been issued grants through the State Arts Board are the Headwaters School of Music and the Arts in Bemidji, St. John's Boys Choir in Collegeville, the Rife Center in Grand Rapids, Burt Rainey Elementary in Granite Falls, Intermedia Arts and Minnesota Orchestra in Minneapolis, Paramount Arts District in St. Cloud, the O'Shaughnessy in St. Paul, Henry Sibley High School in West St. Paul, and the Wildwood Arts Series in Stillwater. Arts Board Services. This is on the line three of the of our appropriation. During the budget cuts in 2003, this line was reduced 61%. The governor's appropriation, governor's proposed appropriation, returns this line to 64% of the pre-crisis level. While we welcome all of the governor's proposed increases, we are especially pleased that this line, which took the most drastic cut in 2003, will get a slightly larger investment. These are the funds that we use to provide the important grant management functions that the state requires. These are also funds that we have available for administrative staff and support. And most importantly, these are the funds that we have available to provide technical assistance and training and promotional services that connect the arts field to our programs and help connect Minnesotans to the arts. The Regional Arts Council numbers that during the budget cuts of 2003, this line was cut by 29%. The governor's appropriation returns it to 72% of the pre-crisis funding level. So, as I move forward, I would like to introduce three individuals who can talk to you more specifically about the impact of the Arts Board programs and the Regional Arts Council's grants and services. They are Kevin Smith, to my far right, who is the president and CEO of the Minnesota Opera; Carolyn Bai, to my far left, who is the executive director of the Metropolitan Regional Arts Council; and Scott Anderson, who is the general manager of the Paramount Theater in Austin. I would like to turn this over to Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'll be very brief. We've already referenced the reduction in State Arts Board funding in recent years, and now a trend towards reinstating those funds. When the reduction was experienced by the arts community, it hit us very directly, very hard. As far as the opera was concerned, we reduced our programming from five productions down to four, which is a 20% decrease, and that's significant, in not only for the performances themselves, but all the education and outreach programs that go with that. We've worked very hard over the years to sustain and build arts organizations here. This week, Minnesota Orchestra will be at Carnegie Hall. 2 weeks ago, St. Paul Chamber Orchestra had a triumphant concert in Berlin. Last Saturday, the Minnesota Opera did the world premiere of a new opera, The Grapes of Wrath, which has had international acclaim and holds the possibility of being what has been the holy grail among American opera companies really since World War II, and that's the search for the great American opera. This wouldn't have been done without the support of the State Arts Board. We get about 4% of our operating budget from the State Arts Board, and that's typical of other performing arts organizations in this state. And that is the single largest annual gift that we will receive. It's something that we can largely count on. We realize that with everything else, even endowment, there are comings and goings and ups and downs as far as the resources. But nevertheless, the public funding provided by the State Arts Board, and I might add, that is really the only public funding that is available to the performing arts organizations. There's no municipal or county funding. It's only state funding. This really is the foundation upon which we build our programs. We're very proud of what we've been able to do, but I can tell you that the reinstatement of State Arts Board funding will have a profoundly positive effect on our ability to sustain and grow and represent this community the way it should be represented.
Thank you. Bye. You want to go next?
I would like to, Mr. Chair, if I could introduce Carolyn Bai to talk about the Regional Arts Councils.
Senator Tomasoni and members of the committee, thank you for letting me represent the state's 11 Regional Arts Councils to you today. The legislature mandated the state's system of regional arts councils throughout Minnesota over 20 years ago, and they did it to ensure that legislative arts funding would reach every corner of the state. And they did it also and designed it to ensure that there would be a process in every region to allow for citizen input and local decision making. Today, each of the 11 regional arts councils is close to the ground. We hear community needs and we're able to respond in ways that have enormous impact, leveraging very small grants and legislative resources. They produce significant outcomes. I know you hear all the time about the intrinsic values of the arts, the soul parts of the arts, but this committee is interested in economic impact of the arts, and I want to explain to you how the Regional Arts Council's allocation statewide helps makes your investment pay dividends throughout the state. You have in front of you a copy of the economic impact study funded by the McKnight Foundation that was done distributed last year by Minnesota Citizens for the Arts and the Regional Arts Councils. It found that nonprofit and community arts organizations created over $1 million of economic impact in every region of the state. And that's easiest to find in the smaller brochure. As you open it to the middle, it does highlight every region of the state and what the impact was for those arts organizations. There is also going to be a study released soon that's going to talk about the economic impact of individual artists, and it's going to show equally significant results. One of the things that I do like to point out when we look at the economic impact of the arts and the audience numbers for the arts in Minnesota is that in this study we found that our audiences come from all walks of life, and over 47% of the respondents to our survey and of arts audiences in Minnesota have combined household incomes of under $60,000 a year. The arts not only reach every corner of the state, but they reach all people in the state. Legislative arts funding through the State Arts Board and the Regional Arts Council, with the outputs they produce by arts organizations and individual artists, means business for local communities and for our state. I spent yesterday at the Central Minnesota Initiative Foundation offices in Little Falls with 40 or so other people who were community and economic development folks focusing on arts in community and how they can have economic impact. The participants came from all over Central Minnesota. While they did share some what I would call soul ways that the arts have been used in their communities as a tool for achieving other ends, such as the city of Wadena, who used an arts project, a community arts project that built sculptural mosaic benches as a way of bringing their community people together to work on the benches, and they used it as a way of, first of all, healing a community tragedy that had happened, and secondly, as a way of bringing together people in their community, the old immigrant communities and the new immigrant communities, as a way of bridging those communities and helping to build trust and understanding. But mostly we talked about ways that communities can harness the economic potential of the arts and artists and maximize community impact. We had examples of things like the three-day arts tours, like the Arts Meander, that's an event touring artists' shops and studios from Canby to Kirkov, from Granite Falls to Ortonville. or similar tours such as the Bluff Country Arts Tours, the St. Croix Valley, the North Shore Tours, or even in my region, the Lower Town Art Tours in Lower Town of St. Paul, or the upcoming Minnesota Highland Fair at the Dakota County Fairgrounds, where thousands of people will participate in arts events over a three-day period. Community folks, arts organizations, artists, and business people, along with a small investment of Regional Arts Council grants that we get through the Minnesota Legislature, provide an economic benefit in community and also just plain fun for those communities. The state's investment in regional arts councils and the state arts board is small, and cuts from the past few years have hurt and they've impeded our ability to do the things that you want done, that you as an economic development committee would like to see in the state. We will put increased funding to good use in all of Minnesota, but it is a particularly important strategy for Greater Minnesota. A recent paper in the Journal of Regional Analysis and Policy by the Humphrey Institute's economist Ann Markison, titled "An Arts-Based Rural Development Policy," stated, "In some small towns and rural areas, agriculture and manufacturing job loss is being counterbalanced by surprising new sources of growth, especially retiree in-migration and arts-related activities. The positives of these communities' lower cost of living and beautiful natural environment are strong draws for both artists and retirees. Nurturing arts and cultural programming and infrastructure can yield multiple benefits, such as more livable communities, retain existing populations, especially young people, attract new residents who bring new economic resources, retirees, and artists. Your funding through the Regional Arts Councils nurtures vital Greater Minnesota arts organizations and also nurtures highly entrepreneurial artists who are, after all, small business people who happen to do art. Arts organizations and artists funded through the State Arts Board and the Regional Arts Councils are your partners in economic development. And increased funding will mean that we can be even more effective economic development partners for all of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bye. Ms. Bye, in your brochure here, there's a little bit about 22,000 full-time jobs created. Is that in the last biennium? Is that the last year? Are those ongoing full-time?
Those are ongoing full-time jobs.
And have they been created over how long?
I can't answer that, but I can get you that information.
And what's wrong with Region 5?
You mean that it's only a million?
Yeah.
Well, actually, if you had a minute, I could tell you a great story from yesterday about something Region 5 is doing that they're doing in Brainerd that is going to be significant for them.
As long as you're improving them, that's okay.
Well, Region 2 is doing very well.
Region 2 is doing really well, yes. I noticed. So is Region 1. See, now, which one of you is the best artist there?
Well, I guess I'd have to say I am.
Yeah.
Because we have an in-resident artist on the committee here, and I think you have a drawing.
Yes, I do.
That he did. We're wondering if it shows any artistic talent at all, or if it's just.
I thought it was Larry Redmond. Oh no, there's a little hair on the side.
Yeah.
There,
so we're not going to tell you who it is. We're not going to tell you who it's supposed to be. We just want to know if the guy who did it had any artistic talent.
Well, I'm going to pass.
Mr. Chair, if it were
somebody in administration, this is supposed to look like.
Good likeness of the chair.
Can you guess? Don't you want to guess? We're not at tape.
We probably wouldn't give this artist one of our individual artist grants at this point.
How much do I get? Can I say who that? You know who that depicts?
It's kind of clear.
It's either the chair or commissioner.
I'm way better looking than that.
That's Dan McElroy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's either the chair or Commissioner McElroy.
But
I got a $10 grant.
Separated at birth.
Beautiful.
You got to promise me, don't give this back.
It's too late.
I'll save it and make sure he gets it.
Senator Dibble, did you have a question?
Oh, I was just wondering if you and McElroy were separated at birth.
No. No, those I have little glasses. That was really an insult. We got to talk now. Does anybody have any questions of Ms. Mai on a serious note?
No, now we're getting serious.
Okay. Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chair, members, again, my name is Scott Anderson from Austin, Senator Sparks' hometown. I manage the Paramount Theater in Austin. I'm also a musician, and I'm on the Southeast Minnesota Arts Council. The Paramount Theater is an old atmospheric movie theater that was built in 1929 and has been restored to its original grandeur, and now it's a performing arts center. And my community has been very rich in the arts since I was a kid. We have our own symphony. Somerset Theater has been there for 40 years. It's a summer theater program. The Riverland College has a theater. I think it's the only community college or one of the only community colleges in the country that has a theater program. We've had an artist series for 40 years. The school system educators are wonderful there. And I was asked to talk about some of the impact as far as state money in the area. In 2006, excuse me, the Austin Symphony received $2,000. They also received an operating support grant of $4,000. Minnesota Storytelling Festival received production assistant grant of $2,000. In 2005, the Austin Symphony got $4,000, and the Storytelling Festival got $2,000. Community College received an artist in education grant of $2,000 in 2004, and the Symphony also received $2,000 and $4,000 in 2004. Matchbox Children's Theater has received in the past money, but it's been quite a while, so I don't have any figures on that. One of my favorites is last year, the Austin Area Arts Center got a very small grant, $250, but they did this program during the summer for children. It was a workshop, and they said they could not do it without this little bit of money. And even though it's a small amount, they wouldn't have been able to do this wonderful program for these kids. And so this money is very important for Southern Minnesota.
You made a really good point. There's been some serious cuts in this the arts program over the years. Have you had to eliminate various programs as a
yes.
result of it?
I have had to at my arts council, and I know that the majority of the other regional arts councils have both cut programs, and we've also cut at my organization the size of grants, and the number of applications funded has gone way down.
No. How do we figure out how much to give the regional arts councils? Is it a percentage of what?
At this point, the regional arts councils get about 28% of the overall allocation, the overall state allocation. And then as a council or as a forum, then we allocate among regions, largely based on population, but there is also a base operating amount of funds, and then there's some consideration for land mass for the fact that some have a much larger territory to cover than, for example, than I do.
And you mentioned the 9-to-1 return on the money. How does that break down? Do you get grants, federal grants? Is it all part of the economic impact?
The way that that 9-to-1 return is that we figured it was simply based on the total amount just of state legislative grants, and then the return on investment in state taxes, the taxes, fees, licenses, and so forth that were related to the activity.
Can you leverage any of the money you get from the state for any federal money? Does that work, or isn't that possible?
Mr. Chair, we do get funding from the NEA for some of our programs, but the majority of that is pre-dedicated pre-programmed, shall we say, for specific programs.
Nothing to do with leveraging, then?
No.
Well, the state would not be allowed to apply for NEA funding if it did not get state funding.
Okay.
That's a criterion.
Mr. Chair. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to thank Mr. Anderson for making the trip up from Austin today. He runs at Paramount Theater. It's a beautiful facility, and as his testimony stated, they use that money very wisely. Those dollars are put to good use down there. So keep up the good work, Scott.
You ever been in it?
Oh, yeah. Christmas programs are wonderful.
You drove by it.
Well, Senator Dibble, you get a real lot of this money, I think, based on those packets we got the last time, don't you?
Yeah, but Mr. Chair, everyone comes to my district, though, to partake in all of those offerings. That's the Walker Arts Center. I mean, there's a lot of community-based organizations, lots of dance programs, theater.
How do you compare, like, the
local galleries, local nonprofit galleries? I'm sorry?
How do you compare, like, the number of people that you bring in, to, like, compared to the Vikings or something like that?
Well, I think the arts brings in a lot more than professional sports does. A lot more people participate and generates a lot more money.
It does.
More sophisticated people?
Actually, there's also a fair amount of crossover.
Uh-huh.
They are not mutually exclusive activities.
That's why I just saved you, Ms. Baker.
And I can attest to that, to Mr. Chair. My daughter works for the Headwaters School in Bemidji, so I'm really grateful that some of your resources go to support that. And just to attest to how important the arts are to the Bemidji community in particular, we have the I think, only private theater company outside the metro area in the state located in Bemidji, so that's another source of pride. It means a lot to our economy, too.
Does anybody have any last comments or further comments, or anybody else want to say something that hasn't commented? Any comments from the committee? What we're going to do is we're going through these budgets now because we're waiting to get a target, and we're waiting to see what the February forecast is going to be, and we'll know how much money we're going to deal with, and then we'll be putting together a committee bill, and we might be asking you to come back to give us some more input, and so just kind of Cap will keep you updated as to what you need to do and when we need to have you here. So thank you all very much. I appreciate your time and coming here and the input you gave us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
We have a Historical Society. Welcome to the committee again. Ms. Archibald.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. I want to begin by thanking the committee for making the trip up to the History Center. That really meant a lot to me. And as I said to Senator Olson before the hearing began, anything I could say today is really minimal compared to, I think, what you took away from that experience because you saw it firsthand. And we're very proud of the work that's done by the Society staff and the service that we give to the people of Minnesota, and I'm glad that you were able to come and see it.
Well, we got to see a bunch of stuff that the average Joe doesn't get to see, right?
Yes, although we do give behind-the-scenes tours from time to time, and you were in the baseball exhibit. That, of course, is open to the public. My only disappointment in your visit was that you came on a Monday when we were closed, and I was asked today, in fact, I left a meeting in my own office today, people were wondering about why we're having all the problems with parking, and I think the baseball exhibit, frankly, is bringing a whole lot of people in whom we don't normally see. And I know that we don't normally see them because when they walk in, Mr. Chairman, they walk around like this.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out where they are. Also, our membership numbers are reflecting that. We've just gone over 19,000 members. So people are signing up to be members because they're realizing that it's a good deal. If you're a member, you can come back to the History Center again without paying, and you can visit our historic sites for free. So they're realizing membership is a really good deal.
Does the ghost of Babe Ruth show up or anything?
We haven't had the ghost of Babe Ruth, Mr. Chairman, but we've had the real thing in Harmon Killebrew. I was not there, but I understand he was there, and I think Paul Molitor was there as well. So we've had some thrilling moments. People love the game.
Yep.
And loving the game, particularly out of season, it's fun to dream.
So do you serve apple pie at the exhibit?
But I think we did Cracker Jacks and popcorn, I think, for the opening of that exhibition. We have for you a PowerPoint that's not really a PowerPoint today because we're not going to use this screen because the room doesn't work awfully well. We thought it was easier just to give you the sheet. And David tells me we do not have any more airplanes. If anybody has lost their airplane and they really need another one, we probably could come up with one, but we don't have one for everybody today. We're going to be quick and get to the budget because I think that's where you want to go. So just very quickly, to remind you, the Society is the oldest organization, the oldest institution in the state, the first one created by the first territorial legislature. We are overseen by a governing board. We're a membership organization. I made reference to our 19,000 members. One of the jobs of our members is not only to support us and take advantage of what we do, but also to elect the Society's governing board, which is a citizen board. We're very proud of that board. That's a hard-working board. I expect you'll get an opportunity to meet a number of those board members as the session unfolds. Close to the state, but not of the state. We are governed, however, by Minnesota statutes. There's a whole chapter in Minnesota law that deals with the Minnesota Historical Society, so we watch that very closely. As I say, if you ask me what we are, I would say that fundamentally the Society is an educational institution. That's the real work that we do. What we try to do is to help people through fulfilling our mission to become aware of the state's history, but also what we're really looking to is the future. That explains our great interest in young people, our work with curriculum for the state schools, our great work with the teachers, the fact that we directly have lessons and in-person experiences with some 250,000 school kids who come to the History Center and visit our sites around the state, and the fact that we do teacher training. This is the hot season right now for about 30,000 kids in the state who are doing History Day projects. It's a really big deal, and Minnesota kids not only compete in this state, but they compete nationally. And I would say that when they do History Day projects, every one of these kids is a winner because they come out with a real sense of belonging. They somehow see how they fit into the larger picture of the state. We do provide opportunities to learn. We also collect and care for a lot of stuff. I was talking to one of my colleagues at the Society the other day who comes from a state that is, I would say if we have one or two competitors, this fellow was born in a state that would have a program not equivalent to ours, but certainly an aspiring program. And when he was there, he looked in depth and looked at the collections, and his biggest shock was that the collections simply were not there. This organization's been collecting since 1849, and that has given us a really depth of material that served the state's people really well. We are also providing accessibility for all of that. As I said, left some gentlemen in my office, and the whole question of accessibility is a big part of what we do. The institution it's a serious research institution with deep, deep collections, but these collections are being used by sixth graders who are coming in to use their History Day projects. You don't have to take a test to come in and use our collections. People come in and use these really valuable materials, and they learn. Accessibility is a big piece of it. I never thought we would come to the point where I would stand in front of a committee and say that we serve more people whom we never see than we actually serve in person. We're serving over 6.5 million people who are using the Society through our website. They're not just hitting it on their way to something else. They're spending time on the site. That's an amazing thing to me. I mean, 10 years ago, you'd have looked at me as if I were losing my mind. But we're serving more people virtually, and it's a very big part and a growing part of the institution's program. Why do we even bother doing this? I obviously, history matters to people who've been here for a long time. They have a sense of their history. When I came to Minnesota as a New Englander, I had a sense of history, but I never thought it was really about my own personal history. The thing that amazes me about the Minnesota Historical Society and the way in which Minnesota does history is that it's about everybody's history. So it's about the newest Minnesotans. And so making those new Minnesotans, I think all of you, and certainly we have an investment in making sure that those newest Minnesotans feel as at home here as Minnesotans who can trace their families back to the 1840s and before. We also carry out core government functions. Even though we're not a state agency, we preserve the state archives of the people of Minnesota. We do records maintenance. We preserve historic sites, and we provide educational services. This, for the first time, of course, now we have a requirement that our young people learn Minnesota history in the state schools. For a long time, never before in the state's history did we have that. We provide the curriculum that is used in the state schools that enables these kids to learn and meet the standards. We obviously need people to do this. There is an organization chart, I think, at the back of the materials, and you could have a look at that and see just what kinds of positions we have, who is doing that, what. I should mention, you asked the Arts Board about what happened in those very tough years. And I can tell you, in 2003, the Society lost over 20% of its full-time staff. It was a very, very tough deal, and we're still coming back from that. It's not easy. What do we do? You know a lot about it. We operate museums. Certainly, we operate the History Center. You had a chance to go there. I hope you'll get over to Mill City Museum. I think that's one of the real triumphs in the Society's work. We did a really great job. We got into an area that was a little iffy, and that was a project to either make you a bum or a hero. If it went badly, you were going to be a bum. If it turned out well, the Society would be heroes, and I think we came out heroes in that project as development has happened around us.
I just want to once again say it's a great museum. If we can't make it over as a committee, everyone should try to get over there. It is really, really remarkable.
It's a great
interpretation of the origins of the city and the state.
Where do you want to go? No. You look like you had wanted to go somewhere too, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I remember also, Ms. Archibald, one of the things you said you had to do because of the funding cuts was to start charging admission to the museum, which was something you really didn't want to do.
Right.
How much money would you need in terms of restoration of funds in order to reverse that trend? Is that even possible, or in particular with respect to school children?
Right. Mr. Chairman, I would want to come back to you with a specific number on that. I don't want to speculate unless David or Chuck has a specific number, because that's a very serious matter. When the History Center opened in 1992, there were a lot of legislators who wanted to charge at that time, and I used to sit over my dead body would that happen. Well, I got to my dead body, and my dead body happened when we were open from, closed 2 days a week. We're open from 10 to 3. I'm leaving the building, and I see parents coming in trying to bring their children in, and they look, and the place is about to close at 3 o'clock. I couldn't take it anymore. Pardon me.
Whose body are you on now?
I'm on 19 lives. I've come back up. Over my dead body. It's not a good thing to be doing. The collections have been given by the people of Minnesota. The story we tell is the story of the people of Minnesota, and I believe that we should not be charging at the History Center. But it's a whole other subject. We will get back to you with a specific number, and the number for school children specifically broken down so you can see that number.
Speaking of numbers.
Yes, get to the numbers. We're just about there. You visited the History Center. You can see that we own 25 historic properties. They're all over the state. As I look around this room, I see some historic sites. I look at faces, and I see historic sites. I see them in Grand Rapids. I see them in other parts of the state. They're an important part of the program, and you're not going to get to visit them probably during the session, but they're there. You do have the Hill House and the Ramsey House within easy shooting distance, so you could get over there and see that. We do all this with our finance administration, our FTEs in those areas. And you can also see, if you look down in terms of numbers, you'll see the depth of the collections, the size of the collections, what we have, just the sheer volume of it. You got some sense of that, I think, when you were there the other day. Number of people served certainly relates to the dollars. Almost $850,000 to the History Center and sites combined, and of those, an additional 250,000 students. I think that really concludes this part of the presentation. I'm going to turn to David Kelleher and to our CFO, Chuck Ergang, to talk about the specific needs and the request, Mr. Chairman.
Who wants to go first?
Mr. Chairman, I'll go first. I'm David Kelleher, legislative liaison for the Minnesota Historical Society. I think the best way to proceed through budget numbers is in your notebooks you have our budget pages that come from the Department of Finance and the Governor's Office. If you look at pages 4 and 5, those two pages give a good snapshot of our budget overall. And I'll just walk through a couple of the items and spend some time on the governor's budget change items as well. And I should also mention that one of those change items is a recommendation for the Minnesota Military Museum, which is a pass-through that comes from the legislature through the Historical Society. And Jack Johnson from the Minnesota Military Museum is here to say a few words about that. So we'll stop at that point. If you look at page 4 of the budget book, you get a sense of the base budget and the governor's recommendations. At the top of that page, the current level of appropriations from the general fund is $23,083,000. And then this page breaks further down by other types of funding sources. I should mention that the gift fund is a category that the Department of Finance uses that's sort of a catch-all, and that includes revenues, donations, earned income, those kinds of things. So that's a pretty significant part of our budget that adds to the state dollars that you all put into our overall budget. If you look at the next category that says expenditures by category, you'll notice that compensation, which is staffing, makes up nearly 60% of our budget. So that's a major proportion of the dollars that you appropriate. Staffing, for folks who are at the History Center doing the behind-the-scenes work that you observed, sometimes those folks were there, sometimes they weren't. The staff who greet the public at historic sites are all part of that category. If you look at the last section of this page, expenditures by program, the way this budget is organized is into three major programs: education and outreach, preservation and access, and pass-through appropriations. The first two really are reflective of our mission, educating the public on history and preserving the artifacts, the reminders of Minnesota's history. If you look at page 5 of the budget documents, the second section that's labeled change items, those are governor's recommendations, and I'll walk through those one by one. The first one, the History Center building lease cost, relates to the History Center. We contract with the Department of Administration's Plant Management Division for the maintenance of the building, running the boilers, that kind of activity. They figure out a lease cost, a square foot lease cost for us, and those costs go up from time to time, as you might imagine, with fuel increases, salary increases. And there's a project that needs to be done at the History Center, even though we all think that the History Center is still brand new. It's been open for 15 years, and staff has been in the building for a little bit longer than that, and the computer controls that control the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system need to be replaced. They're outdated, and you just can't get replacement parts. So the costs of doing that project are reflected in the History Center building lease costs. The second one listed here is the Sesquicentennial Commission. We will be...
Mr. Keller, why was that zero the year before?
Mr. Chairman, what you see here is the governor's recommendation for change items. So those are increases in the columns labeled governor's recommendation FY08, FY09. Those are the increases to the base. So the $23,333,000 reflects the amount, which is on the order of a couple of million, that goes to the building lease costs. Does that answer your question? The zero...
You didn't have any building lease costs in 07?
We didn't have an increase.
Okay. All right. We got it.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the next change item on this list is a recommendation from the governor for funding for the Sesquicentennial Commission. In 2008, the state will celebrate its 150th anniversary. This recommendation is for grants, statewide celebration activities for marking the 150th anniversary, and then administrative costs for the commission itself. That is a total of $2 million from the governor's recommendation. The third item on this list is a one-time appropriation that's part of the governor's veteran support package. If you walk down the hall into the rotunda of the Capitol, you'll see in those display cases are flags from the Civil War era, U.S. Dakota conflict, and Spanish-American War era. Those flags are in desperate need of conservation. They belong to the Adjutant General right now, and we've been working with the Department of Military Affairs to get some funding to do restoration of those flags. This is a one-time appropriation. We think that we will be able to match that with some federal dollars through a program called Save America's Treasures that's through the National Park Service. We'll be applying for funds this spring, and then we'll carry out the conservation work of those flags. There's a longer-term plan to do some work on other flags that are held by the Adjutant General with the Minnesota Military Museum, but step one is to get started on the most important, significant flags that are in the rotunda of the Capitol. Mr. Chairman, the next item on the list is the Minnesota Military Museum, and Mr. Johnson and The folks from the Military Museum will be here in a few minutes to, or will come up here in a few minutes to talk about that. And finally, the last item on the list is a recommendation from the governor for $279,000 in FY08 and $563,000 in FY09 for compensation. That reflects a 2% increase for salaries, health care, and pension increases that are required by actions that the legislature took last year. Our instructions were to plan for 3.25%, and the recommendation here is 2%. So we would have to figure out how to make up the difference depending on what salary costs ultimately are when labor agreements are made between the state and state employee unions. Mr. Chairman, I guess that covers the basics of the budget pages. The way the budget book is organized is it breaks down by those two major program areas, gives some statistics of our activities, and you've heard a great deal of that information. And then each of those sections has a budget page that break down for that specific program. And there are separate pages for each of the change items with a little more explanation of the change items.
What do you do to these flags for $308,000?
Mr. Chairman,
just out of curiosity,
we would have experts, conservators. You guys took a look at the textile lab on your visit, and I guess I can't tell you the specifics of what they'll do. Carolyn Complin is here from the Capitol Historic Site. I don't know if she wants to comment on specifically what goes into that.
I'll talk to her.
It's a lot of staff time to do the work related to that. And there are about 21 flags in the rotunda. I think if you compare the conservation of the star-spangled banner flag that's in the Smithsonian, that was probably millions of them.
Senator Dibble?
I don't have flags.
Well, maybe not. Is there federal money available for that, too, for preservation of?
Mr. Chairman, we plan to apply for funding from a program called Save America's Treasures, and we have to match that with non-federal dollars, and this provides an opportunity to get federal dollars where we probably are not able to provide the match for those dollars. So we're able to extend the state dollars.
Okay. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you went over it, but I think I missed it. In your sources on page 4, the appropriations, the gift section, those are grants from foundations and individuals and private sources.
Mr. Chairman, committee member, that's correct. It includes contributions and also earned income that we may have from either admissions, sales in our stores, contract services, digital and copy, and all the other earned income sources that we have.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious how much does come in via special grants, from local or national corporate family community foundations.
In FY06, federal grants were about $1.25 million.
He's asking foundation,
private foundations, charitable foundations.
Individuals.
About $4.8 million, some of it which, though, is endowment and permanently restricted.
Great. That's great news. Mr. Chair, just a couple more points. One is On the compensation piece, yeah, I do suspect that 2% is not going to cut it. It's probably going to be consumed entirely by health care costs. So if you're wanting to give your employees some salary increases, the 2% is probably not going to do the job. And then one final point, Mr. Chair. I know we're not talking about capital here in this year necessarily yet today, but is the History Society going to be the I'm hearing a lot about what we're going to have to do to this building in the coming years, and there's going to be a large ask. Is it the History Society that's taking the lead on that, or who's? I have this little button that was handed to me, so I think we should do what we need to do on the state capitol itself. But who's spearheading that? I don't know much about it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, the operation and preservation of the capitol is a partnership between the Department of Administration, Capitol Area Planning and Architectural Board, and the Minnesota Historical Society. Our role primarily is education. The school kids who come and visit you guys each spring, we run those tours. And then we're also responsible for overseeing the preservation of this historic building. The actual ask will come from the Department of Administration and the CAP Board, but we've been participating in the selection of the architect, and we'll be active in review of the designs of the restoration of the building.
Well, that makes sense. It's my constituent, the commissioner of admin, who gave me this button today, so being a badger. Okay.
We have some buttons for you also.
All right. I got a lot of those.
Ms. Archibald.
Mr. Chairman, I just would like to add to the answer that was given by our CFO, Chuck Ergang, about the amount of support that we get, which comes from the annual fund, which comes from gifts and grants that we request throughout the year. We also have a fantastic volunteer program. We have about 1,800 people who volunteer at the Society and contribute the equivalent to the institution of 24 FTEs. That is not an insignificant gift. It's a gift of time. But that's extremely valuable. Many of them are professional people who are retired and give us high-level skilled work.
Senator Sacktock.
Mr. Chair, that's actually an excellent, excellent point. And I would just advise you always bring that up, you know, in settings like this, because I think that's significant. That's tremendous.
Senator Sacktock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ergang, prior to 2003, what did the general fund contribute to the Historical Society approximately?
I've got that.
I mean, this biennium, if everything goes the way the government would like, we'll be at, you know, about $51 million, let's say. So what were we pre-2003?
About 54 for the biennium.
And one other question, Mr. Chair, and we noted, Ms. Archibald, that prior to 2003 we didn't charge admission at the building. What do we get approximately? What do you collect approximately for admissions on an annual basis?
At the History Center, for FY06, it was $318,000.
Thank you.
Out of mind.
To follow up on Senator Saxhog's question, did you how many employees have you lost over the years as a result of budget cuts?
Mr. Chairman, before 2003, what I've got is total full-time equivalents, which includes part-time people and full-time people. But we had a high of in FY 2001, 490 full-time equivalents, and where are we at? 371 for this budget.
So 490
to 70. Yeah. 120 FTEs down.
Wow.
It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of jobs, yeah. Okay. Sturgeon, did you want to add to any of this stuff?
Well, I'd be happy to try and address any detailed questions that you might have otherwise.
Well, I got your name here on the list, so I thought maybe you had something more to add. What else should we know?
Should know that we really do a really good job, Mr. Chairman. I believe that. Yesterday, somebody stopped me in the parking lot, a perfect stranger, and told me that, so she thought she recognized me. I like to hear those things. I don't do it. We have a phenomenal staff. You got to meet some of those people. They're terrific.
I was thinking we got to figure out how to get some windows in those rooms down below there where those people are doing all that work. It just seemed to me they were just in too enclosed of an environment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the truth of the matter is when the building was in the design process, the people who actually work in those spaces were very much involved in setting the requirements for them. And in many of those spaces, the lack of sunlight was a major factor in terms of the preservation of the materials.
All right. That makes sense. Yeah.
fortunately, I have not had anyone walk into my office and say, who was the idiot who designed this space? Because most of the idiots who designed those spaces live in them.
Well, I noticed none of them had a tan. So I
yeah.
Okay. Mr. Jensen reminds me that the sesquicentennial legislation, does the language need to be changed on that commission or that committee, the sesquicentennial one?
That's Mr. Really Chairman, it's my understanding that the sesquicentennial commission will be coming forward with some technical changes to the enabling legislation that you passed in 2005. I don't know that that's been finalized. The commission itself has, I think, 8 legislators who will be working on carrying that language forward.
Okay. So we'll wait and see on that. Okay. Any? No, is Mr. Johnson here?
Yes. We'll let Mr. Jack Johnson from the Military Museum.
Mr. Chair, I would simply point out as he's coming up that in regard to the sesquicentennial commission, this is obviously a very important anniversary for the state. The state has created a separate commission. It is not part of the Minnesota Historical Society, but we're doing everything we can to provide solid administrative support so that they will succeed in their endeavor.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jack Johnson, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the Minnesota Military Museum, which is located at Camp Ripley. I'm a member of the Board of Directors of the Military Historical Society of Minnesota, which operates the museum. You have, a one-page document that provides some numbers, and I'd like to just say a few words about the context behind the request that we're making. Our mission, for those of you who may not be as familiar with the museum, is to enhance public understanding of how armed conflicts and military institutions have shaped our state and national experience. We do this by documenting, preserving, and depicting military history as it was experienced by Minnesotans who served in all branches of service or on the home front in time of peace and war from our earliest frontier years to the present time. We operate on a very lean budget. We have no full-time staff. On the surface, the museum has done remarkably well, but there is a flip side to our success. With more requests for help, more artifacts, more books, and archival materials and ever higher public expectations. These growing expectations and an urgency born of accelerating change in the military presents us with a troubling dilemma pitting what we should do in light of our mission and recent historical developments against what we can do given existing resources. We believe strongly that these changes compel our museum to respond actively and quickly. The most profound change has been the steady expansion of American military assignments worldwide. These are things you have all heard about. Peacekeeping missions, counterinsurgency operations, military occupation duty, humanitarian relief, homeland security, U.S. border security, disaster response, a steady procession of flare-ups elsewhere in the world, and ongoing wars in Iran and Afghanistan. These things have stretched our military capabilities to the limit. Bringing things close to home, in the past 10 years, nearly 80% of Minnesota's National Guardsmen have been federally mobilized at least once. Since 9/11, most members of Minnesota-based Army, Air, Navy, and Marine Corps reserve units have been mobilized at least once for federal active duty. The history of these deployments and of Minnesotans serving in the active forces needs to be systematically documented. Exhibits that explain what is going on and that tell the stories of these Minnesotans need to be created. It falls to the Minnesota Military Museum to do this work. It is expected. We have done an excellent job with the resources we have, but we have only one half-time curator, not nearly enough to appropriately record, conserve, and care for 30,000 artifacts, document and record histories, and develop new exhibits while keeping ongoing exhibits fresh and up to date. The backlog of new artifacts that need processing keeps mounting. The museum lacks a computerized artifact database. There are many things we can and should do to improve programming and outreach, but it all requires staff time and specialized expertise. We've made heavy use of volunteers, but volunteers can do only so much, and they require training, oversight, and direction from professional staff. We face a very real dilemma. How can we reconcile our current capabilities with our certain conviction that we need to support our state-oriented mission and appropriately honor our current Minnesota service members and veterans by preserving the story of what they have experienced? We feel that we are at a critical turning point in the museum's own history, and that brings us to you. We request a major increase in funding in order to strengthen our collection and its management, to proactively document and educate the public about the recent military deployments and personal experiences of Minnesota's servicemen and women, to rework existing exhibits and create new ones, to expand educational outreach and increase the necessary administrative support. Our long-term vision is to have one of the finest state military museums in the nation, a dynamic institution that properly honors its veterans while providing genuine value to the citizens of the state. Governor Pawlenty recognized this by putting it into his budget. We seek to stay true to our mission and to our vision, and with your support, we strongly believe that we can. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you might have.
Senator Olson.
Is the recommendation from Governor Pawlenty sufficient to do the job you're asking us to support?
That would make an incredible difference to us if we could get the authorization that he is recommending in his budget. Absolutely. It'd go a long way.
So this is $210,000 per year above the base that you had before? Is that what I'm seeing here?
I think it was 201. Was it 201?
201. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Why does it say that there? Is that just a typo?
It's 201.
All right, we got a bad proofreading on that thing. Okay.
All right. Okay. Any questions of Mr. Johnson? Senator Dibble.
All right. So what was Minnesota's unique role in the history of the Jeep? It's a special exhibit I saw that you have.
Well, you'll have to come to the museum and read up on it. But I can tell you it was that the Jeep was named after a prototype vehicle that was tested at Camp Ripley in 1940 during U.S. Army maneuvers. And the name stuck. Some of the people from the regular army who were up there on these maneuvers came back and started using that terminology to describe what became the Jeep as we all know it today.
Who knew?
Have any of you gone up there and ridden in the tanks or anything?
Yeah,
in the
past, yeah. Yeah, I used a picture of me doing that as my campaign photo.
So it's good you were unopposed, huh?
Me okay. And Dukakis, yeah.
Any further questions? Okay, for both of you that have been here, we had you come in to discuss the numbers and let us know what the impact was on your budget and how you felt about it. And we're waiting for February forecasts, and we're waiting for leadership to make some decisions on targets. And we're going to be putting out a bill that is going to be a committee bill that will encompass all the agencies and all the spending of this committee. So we'll be getting back to you, and Cap will let you know when we need you to come back if we need you to testify further. So.
Thank you very much.
Mr. O'Rourke, our next meeting.
Senator, Mr. Chairman, our next meeting will be Monday, and we will be going over some of the bonding requests that we have in our committee. So, members, if you do have, and I don't think any of the members on our committee has a bill that has a bonding bill in our committee, but we still have some slots if you want a hearing. So,
and we'll most likely be just recommending them to be sent over to the bonding committee.
Correct.
So, all right.
So any questions or comments from the committee? Anybody want to say anything else before I adjourn? Go ahead. Can you go up to the table, sir? Can you go up to the table, sir, and just say your name? And
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ray Lundy. I'm the current chairman of the board at the museum at Camp Ripley. Uh-huh. I just want to take the time to thank you for listening to us and hope you can support us.
Well,
we're very good stewards of the money that's given to the museum, I'll tell you.
Well, thank
it goes
you.
A long way for us.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
I appreciate that. Okay. What, how do you spell your name?
L-U-N-D-E.
Just like it sounds, huh?
Pardon?
Just like it sounds, huh?
Yes, sir.
Senator Dibble.
And are these gentlemen also on your board?
Yes. Board member Lyle Doerr and Sid Schluckler from the UC.
Well, I'm head of the Military War Memorial Foundation. I work very closely with the Military Foundation.
Thanks for coming
down.
What's your
name? And then we got Steve Osborne here from the Fort Snelling. He was there for 35 years at the Historical Society there, and now he's working over at the
main building
now. And he's on our board of directors.
Great. Now, where do you guys live?
I'm in Corcoran, Minnesota.
Where?
He's from Corcoran.
Okay.
I'm from Stillwater.
Lilydale.
Lyle.
Stillwater.
Steve.
Minneapolis.
Nobody from the range?
One of our vice presidents is from Duluth.
Well, that's not the range.
Edge of the range.
I was born, grew up on the range.
Okay.
But what is what?
Well, we might have to talk about a spot on that board for some ranger here. So anyway, okay. Thank you all for coming. We appreciate it. And meeting adjourned.